Well, it's going to be a heck of a Tuesday for us, guys. Where should we begin? I'll tell you this. Something is not right. Something is not right. And I am going to need you, whoever it is that's listening to this podcast right now, to wake up. Because I am telling you, this is not a battle between left and right. We all thought that at some point. We believed that. You're my enemy. You're my enemy. It is not a battle between Russia, Ukraine. I don't care what your political issue of the day is. What is happening right now in the world and what just happened to my friend Charlie Kirk is a battle of sheer evil versus goodness. What do I have for you guys today? Okay, well, first and foremost, the indictment against Tyler Robinson was just released, and I have a lot of questions that I think need to be answered regarding his trans boyfriend, Lance Twiggs. Well, I just spoke to a family member who told me a lot about Lance Twiggs because the media is kind of presenting him as this do-gooder. You might be interested to know that his family has a different perspective. Also, Turning Point employees are contacting me, a lot of them, okay? And I am not liking what I am hearing from them about things that took place leading up to that Hamptons event, some changes at the organization in the months leading up to that event, and what had been happening more broadly at the company over the last year. Speaking of which, Bill Ackman, you may have caught that he responded to me about the Hamptons with a lot of words to really say nothing at all. And I want to be clear, I am not done, okay? I'm coming for everybody. Charlie Kirk's death is really just a beginning. So welcome back. Let's start with some major updates regarding the Charlie Kirk case. First and foremost, what always stood out to us about this shooting was Decoy Boy, right? We're all on social media. We all watch the news. We have all, whether we wanted to or not, witnessed, thanks to social media and the news, a lot of shootings. A lot of shootings, whether it's gang-related or otherwise. And I have to say, I don't know if I'm the only one, never in my entire life have I seen a situation when a shooting happens and then somebody completely unrelated to the shooting that just happened jumps up and down and says that they did it and gets arrested for saying that they did it, implying that they did it. Well, for whatever reason, George Zinn, who is a 71-year-old man, was moved to do that, right? Instantly. Charlie Kirk gets shot. Suddenly, the 71-year-old man jumps up and creates what is obviously some sort of a distraction. Okay, we have eyes, we can see that. That's not normal. He creates a distraction. So let's just take a look at this clip of him being arrested in the aftermath of the shooting. Well, now it's about to get even stranger because since he's been arrested, he's now facing charges of obstruction of justice because he didn't do it, right? Why would you do that? Why would you obstruct justice in this manner? And now, in addition to those charges, we learn that he's been harboring images of child abuse, okay? He has kiddie porn. This is the headline. I can't make this up. Man arrested for allegedly faking confession to Charlie Kirk's killing, George Zinn, accused of obstructing justice, was also booked in connection with images on his cell phone related to child abuse, okay? So we learn from this article that after being arrested, the 71-year-old man for this second-degree felony, which is obstruction of justice, he was also, when the police had approached him, he was being weird about giving them his cell phone, okay? So they took him into custody, they treated him for a medical condition, and then they start asking this guy questions about, you know, what are you doing? Can we see your cell phone? And he's being really cagey about giving over his cell phone. They're like, okay, we're trying to get to the bottom of why you would stand up and scream, shoot me, immediately following the aftermath of this murder, okay? And what they discover is that when asked by an officer, okay, after he, like, they figure out that, like, he's not being cooperative, is that he has images. He has images of kiddie porn. There's no other way to say this, of related to child abuse on his cell phone. Now, what does that tell you about this guy? Okay. What does it tell you about George Zinn? What that signals to me about George Zinn is that I've read a lot about Jeffrey Epstein. I've read a lot about blackmail operations. The people they tend to go after are people who are into children. Full stop. Now, I'm not saying, I obviously, he's just been charged here, so I guess we have to say allegedly, but that's what's coming out now, that they found images on his cell phone. So this guy who is into this sort of thing, we also figure out that in the past he has given interviews related to September 11th and Al-Qaeda. He is in Utah and he is obstructing justice. And he also happens to have this totally disgusting addiction of some description. I'm assuming it's an addiction, and that's what he's harboring. He's harboring child abuse images on his phone. That's what I'm going to tell you. That's my instinct immediately. I don't like this guy. That is suspect, okay? Something to watch. Now, in terms of this indictment, now that we can formally read the indictment, there's been a lot that's been said that I think a lot of the miscommunication is perhaps coming from Governor Cox. I think he, in and of himself, I probably should look into Governor Cox. I'm not sure why he said some things that are apparently untrue. Maybe he misspoke. I understand there is a lot of pressure when it comes to this investigation. But let's just take us through this indictment. I think it's important for us to go through it so that we can see the setup here of what took place on September 10th. Now, first, they provide basically an overview in this indictment. It's a probable cause statement. They tell us that basically, after 33 hours, they really love saying 33 hours. I don't know why they keep signaling that to us. On September 11, 2025, when Tyler James Robinson surrendered to police at Washington County Sheriff's Office, that was when it happened. They found DNA consistent with Robinson on the rifle trigger. After shooting Mr. Kirk, Robinson hid the gun. They're going to get into that. Discarded the clothing that he was wearing when he fired the rifle, and he told his lover/roommate to delete incriminating text messages and not to speak with police. And also, they will be charging him count six because children were present at the time of the shooting. Okay, now, to get through this, we are told that the suspect, after this shooting took place, that there was a police officer who immediately looked upward and realized that he had heard the sign of a rifle, knew that it was obviously coming from the rooftops. They then began crawling through the footage to see what had happened. They tell us that this discovery led to an intensive review. Let me go actually back up to this paragraph. Police reviewed surveillance from the camera that was covering the roof and discovered that it recorded an individual that was dressed in dark clothing who had crossed the railing from the public walkway and dropped onto the roof at approximately 12:15 p.m. Now, just to very quickly, I'm going to just tell you, according to our timeline, we know that Charlie gets shot at 12:23 p.m. So they're now telling us that he was on that roof since 12:15 p.m. So he's setting up that shot, we can assume, for about 8 minutes, okay? It goes on, although the individual moved out of the camera's view for a short time, the camera again captured the individual running across the roof and then low crawling to the area that the officer had recognized as where the suspected sniper had dropped into a prone shooting position. After a short time, which matches the known time of the shot, the individual arose and then ran across the roof to the northeast. So nothing in here implies that he had, taken apart the shotgun. That just seems to be now removed from the narrative altogether. It goes on to read that this discovery led to an intensive review of UVU surveillance recordings to attempt to track and identify the suspect. Surveillance revealed the following, that at approximately 11:51 a.m., the suspect had entered campus from the north. He is wearing a black shirt with an American flag in its center, a dark baseball cap, large sunglasses. Throughout the surveillance, the suspect keeps his head down and rarely raises his head enough to get a clear image of his face. As he proceeds across the campus, he is seen walking with an unusual gait. The suspect walks with very little bending in his right leg, consistent with a rifle being hidden in his pants. This unusual gait continues until the suspect is seen crossing the railing off the open walkway and onto the roof where he leaves the camera's view. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to say is they've only sent us screenshots, right? We've only seen a picture of him coming up the staircase. It looked to me like both his legs were bending. I don't see why they don't just release. Why don't they just release this fully so we can make sure that this is the same person that we see walking across with a limp, right? That footage, which was provided by TMZ. Also, you will notice that nowhere in this indictment as we go on are they going to mention which Governor Cox spoke about. Like, first he came in a different outfit. Remember, Governor Cox said he was wearing the light shorts and maroon shirt. The implication here being that maybe he came to come scout things, to check things out. At first, this is him, but then he comes back in the black outfit. This is missing from the indictment, and I'm wondering why. What is the explanation for that? That would be a part of it if you were scouting the shooting. Now they're just like, let's jump into the guy that is wearing black, and we're not going to give you footage. We're going to tell you that this is him, and you can assume that he slowly walked up this staircase and was obscuring his face from view. Okay, then it tells us that a camera later captures the suspect as he runs across the roof. He gets into the shooting position, and then immediately after the shot was fired, we know that he runs across carrying an item whose shape is consistent with a rifle. The suspect is then seen climbing down the roof. He appears to drop the item that he was carrying as he hits the ground in a controlled fall. He then picks up the item and runs toward the northeast end of the campus. It tells us that's how they then expand their crime scene investigation. They followed his escape path to the northeast end of the campus, where they believe the suspect left campus and entered a wooded area. In that wooded area, investigators found a bolt-action rifle wrapped in a towel. So again, there was no disassembly. It's wrapped in a towel. Presumably, that's how he covered it while he was running. The rifle contained one spent round and three unspent rounds. This is consistent with the facts officers observed at the time of and immediately after the shooting. There were no shell casings that were found on the roof, suggesting a bolt action rather than an auto-loading weapon, and only a single round was fired, okay? Then they tell us what was actually inscribed. And these are essentially memes. "Hey, fascist, catch," says one on one cartridge. You've got "notices bulge." "What's this?" on another cartridge. "Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow, Chow," on a third cartridge. And on the fourth cartridge, it reads, "If you read this, you are gay, LMAO." Okay, they've detailed that. The rifle, the ammunition rounds, and the towel were then sent for forensic processing, and that the DNA was consistent with Robinson that was found on the trigger and other parts of the rifle, the fired cartridge casing, and two of the three unfired cartridges and the towel. Okay, they were able to immediately locate the shooter. They were unable to immediately locate the shooter, so that's when they published the photos of the shooter from their surveillance and they asked for the public's help. Now we're going to get a little bit more of a narrative change, right? They tell us that as they continued their investigation on September 11th, Tyler James Robinson then walked in to the Washington County Sheriff's Office, and he is accompanied by his parents and a family friend to turn himself in. Okay. Now, again, he didn't confess yet, but he's here to turn himself in. Robinson's mother stated the following to police, that on September 11th, the day after the shooting, she saw the photo of the shooter in the news and thought that the shooter looked like her son. She then called her son and asked him where he was. He said he was at home sick and that he had also been homesick on yesterday, September 10th, when the shooting occurred. Robinson's mother expressed concern to her husband that the suspected shooter looked like Robinson. So she's calling her husband and she's going, "Hey, this kind of looks like our son." And then his father agrees that looks like their son. So Robinson's mother explained to the officers that over the last year or so, Robinson had become increasingly more political. He had started to lean more left. He was becoming more pro-gay and more trans-right oriented. That Robinson began to date his roommate, which is a biological male who was transitioning genders. We're going to get to him in a second. This resulted in several discussions with family members, but especially between Robinson and his father, who have very difficult political views. In one conversation before the shooting, Robinson mentioned that Charlie Kirk would be holding this event at UVU, which Robinson said was a stupid venue for the event. Robinson accused Kirk of spreading hate. Robinson's father reported that when his wife showed him that surveillance image of a suspected shooter in the news, he agreed that it looked like their son. He also believes that the rifle that the police had suspected the shooter had used matched a rifle that was given to his son as a gift. And as a result, he then contacts his son and asks him to send a photo of the rifle that was gifted to him. Robinson did not respond to that. However, Robinson's father spoke on the phone with Tyler at that moment, and Tyler implied that he planned to take his own life. Now, his parents were then able to convince him to meet at their home, not to do that. And as they discussed the situation, Robinson implied is the word they use here, that he was the shooter, and stated that he could not go to jail and that he just wanted to end things. When asked why he did it, Robinson explained that there was too much evil and that this guy, Charlie Kirk, spreads too much hate. They talked about Robinson turning himself in, and they convinced Robinson to speak with a family friend who happens to be a retired deputy sheriff. And at Robinson's father's request, the family friend met with Robinson and his parents, and they convinced Robinson to turn himself in, okay? Again, he did not confess, but he turned himself in. And they then detail that they tell him, hey, look, also bring in any clothes that you used, because you don't want the police to then have to search the property of your parents. So anything that you use, you need to bring over. Okay, that doesn't exactly make sense because Robinson is living with his trans boyfriend. But that is apparently Robinson replies that at that moment that he had disposed of clothes in different area. So they're looking into that. Okay. Now we're getting to the roommate portion, which is very interesting to me, and I will tell you why. It's interesting to me because I obviously have had a lot of tips. I've had a lot of conversations with people that knew both of these individuals. When I say both, I'm referring to Tyler Robinson, who is being indicted, but also his boyfriend, who has not been indicted. And the conversation that I am having is that Tyler's classmates and the neighborhood are very shocked that Tyler would be, first and foremost, involved in this at all. So right away, they told me, no way this guy is wearing the same outfit from 33 hours ago, because he was very tidy. He sort of kept to himself, but he worked with his hands and he was kind of a good person. There were no signs here. Like this appears to them to be like, this is a very good family, and that there were certain narratives out there that didn't make sense to them. Like they could not compute them as it pertained to Tyler Robinson, okay? And they're saying there's no way if like they're not saying he couldn't have been involved. I very, very much want to be clear. I believe that Tyler Robinson was involved on the basis of this evidence, but rather that there's no way he could have acted alone, that this had to be a part of some wider plot. Okay. And when I'm speaking to people that are close to this situation, what they are shocked about is the fact that only Tyler could have been arrested, because it's a different perspective when it comes to Tyler's trans boyfriend, okay? Tyler's trans boyfriend's name is Lance Twiggs. And they are very shocked. In fact, the people that are intimately involved in the situation are saying, we thought he was definitely going to get charged, because apparently, and again, I'm going to say this, allegedly, he had been arrested or taken in on the same day. Now, the media narrative is that that guy was being really cooperative. He had nothing to do with anything. Okay, we're going to go through that. And again, I'm going to tell you what his family is saying. I'm referring now to Lance Twiggs. Let's get to what the indictment tells us about him. Police interviewed Robinson's roommate, a biological male who was involved in a romantic relationship with Robinson. The roommate told police that he had received messages from Tyler Robinson about the shooting, and he provided those messages to police. And then it goes on, describing those messages. On September 10th, 2025, oh wait, they're not telling us the time. I don't like that. I hope that's just you forgot, but I need to know exactly when you're saying these messages were sent, okay? Because I need to fit them into my timeline, okay? Clearly, on the basis of what I'm about to read, these messages had to have gone out after Charlie Kirk was shot, if I'm using my context clues, my Blue's Clues to put things together, but they're not clear here. They just say on September 10th, 2025, no time given, the roommate received a text message from Robinson, which said, quote, drop what you are doing and look under my keyboard. The roommate, Lance, then looks under his keyboard and he finds a note that states, quote, I had the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk and I'm going to take it. The structure of that is weird. I had the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk and I'm going to take it. Okay. That's just structurally, that's not proper English. Okay. It's either I have, okay, or I had, past tense. Again, not clear. Police found a photograph of this note and the following text exchange then took place. After reading that note, the roommate texts Tyler and he says, what? You're joking, right? Robinson writes, I'm still okay, my love, but I am stuck in a REM for a little while longer yet. Shouldn't be long until I can come home, but I gotta grab my rifle still. To be honest, I had hoped to keep this secret till I died of old age. I am sorry to involve you. The roommate replies, you weren't the one who did it, right? Robinson replies, I am. I'm sorry. The roommate replies, I thought they caught the person. Robinson replies, no, they grabbed some crazy old dude that interrogated someone in similar clothing. I had planned to grab my rifle from my drop point shortly after, but most of that side of town got locked down. It's quiet, almost enough to get out, but there's one vehicle still lingering. The roommate says, why? Robinson says, why did I do it? The roommate says, yeah. Robinson says, I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out. If I am able to grab my rifle unseen, I will have left no evidence. Going to attempt to retrieve it again. Hopefully, they have moved on. I haven't seen anything about them finding it. The roommate says, how long have you been planning this? Robinson says, a bit over a week, I believe. I can get close to it, referring to the rifle, but there's a squad car parked right by it. I think they already swept that spot, but I don't want to chance it. Robinson says, I'm wishing I had circled back and grabbed it as soon as I got to my vehicle. I'm worried what my old man would do if I didn't bring back Grandpa's rifle. I don't know if it had a serial number, but it wouldn't trace to me. I worry about prints. I had to leave it in a bush where I changed outfits. Didn't have the ability or time to bring it with. I might have to abandon it and hopefully they don't find prints. How the F will I explain losing it to my old man? Only thing I left was the rifle wrapped in a towel. What? You're worried about explaining losing the rifle to your father. Not worried that you left the rifle and therefore it's obviously going to be found out. Like the only thing that you left was the right, like the murder weapon. This is weird. This chain is weird to me. It's weird to me that we don't know what time. I don't know what he means. Where is he stuck here, guys? Do you have a clue here? I'm stuck in a REM for a little while longer. It shouldn't be long until I can come home. Is that a typo? I should have asked you guys. Okay, that's the town. Okay, that's the town. I'm stuck here for a little while longer. It shouldn't be long until I can come home, but I got to grab my rifle still. So is this happening during lockdown? He tells him to check under and to see, oh, check under quickly and see, and I took care of it, and he's where? And now he's giving him an accounting of exactly what's taken place, which means if this is right after and they're still in lockdown, he's what, monitoring the situation? Because this is going to give us a timeline, whether they tell us when these messages happened or not. The fact that he already knows that they grabbed some crazy old dude and that they also interrogated someone in similar clothing, we're going to be able to go back and plot exactly when that happened, or at least when the public was informed, because this whole correspondence is very strange to me. It's very strange to me. He then is even more explicit, talk about trying to cover your tracks, but then explicitly texting everything to your lover. He says, the only thing I left was the rifle wrapped in a towel. Remember how I was engraving bullets? The effing messages are mostly a meme. If I see notices bulge on Fox News, I might have a stroke. All right, I'm going to have to leave it. That really effing sucks. Okay, so if this is our guy, oh, we're not done. Let's finish. That really sucks. He's got to leave it. And then he says, judging from today, I'd say grandpa's gun does just fine. I think that was a $2,000 scope. And then he does a winky face. And then he tells him, delete this exchange. And then Robinson says, my dad wants photos of the rifle. He says, grandpa wants to know who has what. The feds released a photo of the rifle, and it is very unique. He's calling me right now, not answering. So his dad's calling him. Okay, well, the dad, this is interesting. Is this when is this text chain taking place? Okay, because we just heard that, you know, the dad, they figured it out the next day. They're making it sound like this all happened back to back. Is this happening over 2 days? Why not tell us this instantly so I can work it into my timeline? Okay, are these messages day one? And then what? They had no correspondence at all until he jumps right back in and says, my dad's calling me. Where were you when your dad called you? You guys live together. Why are you texting at all? Why didn't this kid immediately call? If they're in lockdown and he needs to go back and get his rifle, right? This kid could have, and I'm speaking about Lance, could have contacted immediately and said, I'm getting a confession right now. I don't like that we are not being told the exact timestamp of these messages because, you know, my timeline demands it. To close loop on how this enters, again, not knowing when this happened, Robinson says, my dad wants photos of the rifle. He says, grandpa wants to know who has what. The feds released a photo and it's very unique. He's calling me right now, not answering. Robinson says, well, since Trump got into office, my dad has been pretty diehard MAGA. Robinson says, I'm going to turn myself in willingly. One of my neighbors is here. He is a deputy for the sheriff. Robinson says, you are all I worry about, love. I'm much more worried. The roommate says, Lance says, I'm much more worried about you. Robinson says, don't talk to the media, please. Don't take any interviews or make any comments. If any police ask you questions, ask for a lawyer and stay silent. How are you guys feeling about that? Yeah. Mark is going to jump on and say something. Go ahead, Mark. Yeah, he's the guy that's always in my ear.
Not always. I just noticed that around some of these exchanges, there's ellipses above them.
You're breaking up a little bit. What'd you say?
Around some of these exchanges, there's ellipses above, if you look really closely.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're cherry picking certain exchanges so that my dad is super MAGA just comes out of nowhere because they picked it from a totally different part of the conversation.
Yeah, these messages are clearly doctored, is what I would say. They're doctored. Now, they could decide why they're doing that. Tyler's being forthcoming. We're protecting him in some capacity. I find that to be unacceptable. Okay? Unacceptable. I want every single text message. I want timestamps. It is conspicuous that you are not telling us when this was sent because it sounds like it's when the campus is on lockdown. And he's got to go back and got to clean up. And then all of a sudden we're in the next day when his dad is getting clued in after the picture has been released. They're not telling us that. Okay. And you have a right to be a little bit uncomfortable about that because I'm a lot of bit uncomfortable about that. We need full answers. Further to that point, I have found this strange from the beginning that for whatever reason, we're not hearing too much about this Lance guy other than like he's been extremely cooperative. He's handed over his messages. I'm not implying that Lance was involved. I am implying that it's weird that we're not hearing more about him, right? You're telling me he lived with the guy. You're telling me us now that he's been texting with the guy about his plans. They're in love. Is nobody interested in learning more about this character? Okay, so Tyler's people are saying Tyler's a good kid. People around Tyler, classmates are telling me he's a good kid. So I go into our tips box and it turns out that actually Lance Twiggs' family has tried to reach out to me over the weekend. Obviously, I was in a very aggrieved state and I was not prepared to even accept that Charlie Kirk was not on this earth, okay? And I realize that they're saying to me, like, you know, we want to speak with you. And there's more than one family member that has reached out because we trust you and we don't trust the media. Good. Good by me. They are, it sounds to me, a very good family. They're absolutely horrified by what has happened. And they are similarly perplexed by there not being more out there about the person he was living with, especially because what they told me, and I can tell you this exclusively, is that the house that Tyler Robinson was living in with Lance is owned by them. Tyler Robinson is paying rent to them. Okay, so they know Lance, obviously, and I'm going to cushion this with allegedly. It isn't allegedly that this is his family members telling me these details, but it is definitely, allegedly what they say until we can hear both sides. Okay, I'm going to pull this up because I took notes regarding Lance because I want to know everything. Okay. Lance, they told us, went to live with his relatives, so no longer in the house with his mother and father. Again, allegedly. His parents kicked him out junior year of high school because he was problematic. He just had issues. And at that time when they kicked him out, that wasn't exactly what they are saying legal for them to have done that. But again, he went to live with relatives and he has issues. They say that he allegedly has a lot of issues with drinking. That Christmas, approximately 3 years ago, he almost overdosed. He drank a bottle of vodka. They are telling me that they were there. They were present for this. And fear began to spread about whether or not even the family would be able to take care of him because of issues that he was having. Okay, he graduates high school and then essentially the extended family says, you know, we can't keep you in our home because of his behavior. Just this past Easter Sunday, they are telling me that he showed up on drugs and he was spouting out of his mouth about political stuff. And at this point, they felt that he could not be around children, that they felt that he had become increasingly more radical, increasingly more dangerous, and just sort of off the rails. They said that they're unhappy that the media is presenting him in this like manner, like he's just this kind of like soft guy, or like, you know, a person that was just transitioning. There's like nothing problematic. There's no prodding. They don't buy the story. Okay. Lance's family is telling me that they are not buying the current story and that they feel that more people are involved. First and foremost, they say that a lot of information should be able to be discerned by his devices because he was, according to them, deep web. Okay. This is the person that is deep on the internet. They said that he was quite reclusive, that he was always on his devices, that he's always on the web, and that there should be more information that comes from there. Okay. He turned 22, they told me, back in August, and that he was, as I said, very into this dark web stuff. I asked what he was doing for work. Like, how are they even able to pay you guys rent? And they told me that he was doing some plumbing work with somebody else in the family. They told us that Tyler and him had been living together for at least a year, that they had not met Tyler, despite the fact that Lance had wanted to foster that meeting, that the two of them, this couple, Tyler and Lance, were living in that townhome that is owned by Lance's family, and that Tyler was paying rent to Lance. And Lance then, of course, was forwarding that payment to them. Now, I had asked them about another persistent rumor that is arriving in my inbox, which people are saying who live in the neighborhood, that they noticed some unusual traffic. And this individual family member said to me, yup, we are hearing the exact same thing, that they would prod that narrative further. But there was some unusual traffic, a lot of cars that were seen outside leading up to the shooting in the days before the shooting or the week before the shooting. I'll straighten out that timeline for you and get real specific because I will pin down when exactly this was happening. But leading up to the shooting, that there were unusual traffic in the driveway where Tyler Robinson and Lance lived. Cars that were not recognized in the neighborhood. This was not a couple that hosted people. It wasn't like they were expecting them to have parties. And so other people are saying that that is something that struck them as odd. There was unusual traffic at this house in the weeks leading up to this shooting. And again, I will perfect that timeline of exactly when. And I have gone out to people for evidence of that. But there were apparently lots of different license plates, and it therefore caused a little neighborhood, you know, kerfluffle, because other people were not able to park their cars because there were so many people that were at this house. Unusual traffic. Again, we are prodding that narrative. We are taking a look at everybody, because if I don't feel good about what we're hearing, okay, and Lance Twigg's family doesn't feel good about what we're hearing, and we've got Decoy Boy, who's apparently involved in some deep internet stuff, I would say. It's a fair way to describe it. Decoy Boy. Okay, George Zinn. There's more people involved. That's what I'm going to say to you guys. There is very clearly more people involved, okay? This feels to me like a conspiracy. And am I emotionally invested in this? Yes. Somebody said something to, oh, you're unstable. Yeah, you know what? You're right. I have been destabilized by watching Charlie Kirk catch a bullet in his neck and then being gaslit and told nothing to see here. We've got people all around him that are telling little lies. I don't like this. Okay. This doesn't feel clean to me. I need timestamps. If you're going to be transparent, be transparent. I'm not saying that you're being dishonest, that you have these text messages. I am saying that I need them in my timeline, okay? And it is just weird that you're giving exact times about certain things, and then suddenly you're like, you know what? We don't need to be so exact anymore, and we can just extrapolate what we need to tell the public a certain narrative, okay? We, the public, don't need a narrative. We need every single plausible detail. If we are ever going to regain any trust in the authorities, post-Epstein world, okay? We're living in a post-Epstein world. It doesn't fly with us. That's not it, you guys. I have more to tell you. I am going to, I guess, at first, just get through some ads, and we're going to get into Bill Ackman's, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just wandering excuse or wandering answer to our episode yesterday, which really didn't say anything. And I've got more people reaching out to us, people that were at the event, people that were at Turning Point USA. We got some questions to ask, and I'm going to ask all of them, because guess what? I don't take money from donors. So you got a problem here. I don't want your money. I don't need your money. What I want and I need is the truth. First and foremost, you guys, I'm telling you about Preborn, because every heartbeat tells a story. And at Preborn, they give moms in crisis the chance to hear that heartbeat for free. And that's exactly why I partner with Preborn, because Preborn is not out to judge women. They're making motherhood possible for them. They provide free ultrasounds. They share the gospel of Jesus Christ. And most importantly, they stay after the baby is born with real practical support by giving expecting mothers diapers, baby clothes, and even housing and financial help for up to 2 years after the baby is born. That is what true Christ-centered compassion looks like. And here's how you can be a part of it. For just $28, you can give a mom a free ultrasound once she gets that chance to see her baby, and she will be twice as likely to choose life. Preborn is on a mission to save 70,000 babies this year, so don't just say you're pro-life. You can actually live it by donating now. Call 855-601-2229 or go to preborn.com/Candace. Again, that's preborn.com/Candace. Telling you guys again about GNO land, because what if smart contract platforms weren't controlled by the elites or big tech? What if they were instead built by and for real builders, the people like you? That's the question that GNO land wanted to ask. And that's why they built GNO land. They started with Galang, which is a language real world developers already use. And they built a new platform around it. It's transparent, it's intuitive, and it makes sense. There's not some confusing system of ones and zeros. It's open source. So you can imagine GitHub, but designed for on-chain collaboration and composability. Builders actually get credit for their work, and they get rewarded every time their code gets used. And that's really the value, not likes, not clout, but actual rewards. GNO Land rejected proof of stake, which is a system where the rich run the show. And they instead went with proof of authority instead, which is a DAO where contributors and not bad actors or Silicon Valley actually call the shots. GNO.land is open, it's fair, and honestly, it's pretty unstoppable. So if you are a builder and a freedom lover, or you're just tired of rigged platforms, go ahead and check out GNO.land/Candace. Again, that's GNO.land/Candace. Something that my team and I are always craving are beef sticks, specifically the ones from my friends over at Paleo Valley. Paleo Valley makes their meat sticks with 100% grass-fed beef, sourced from small scale regenerative American farms, so you can feel good about what you're eating and what you're supporting. They stripped out all the junk. So there's no preservative, there's no gluten, there's no soy, there's no dairy, there's no sugar, there's no GMOs, just clean, nutrient dense fuel, the way that food was meant to be. So whether you're road tripping, working late, or running around with kids, these sticks deliver high protein energy. There's no crash. If you're keto, you're paleo, or you're carnivore, it does not matter. Paleo Valley will work with your lifestyle, not against it. They come in multiple bold flavors, including original jalapeno, summer sausage, maple bacon, and teriyaki. So there's something for everyone. With over 55 million beef sticks sold, Paleo Valley is trusted, it's proven, and it's backed by a 60-day money-back guarantee. Right now, you'll get 20% off your first order at paleovalley.com/Candace with code Candace. That's paleovalley.com/Candace, promo code Candace. Okay, so I want to be very clear here. No one, and I mean absolutely no one, outside of my husband and Erica Kirk, has the power to shut me up right now. That's it. Two people. If you got to make an appeal, you got to go to them, okay? That's what I just said is meant to be a dig to the donors that are making frantic calls trying to politic this situation under control because they know I'm telling the truth, okay? Frantic calls from Seth Dillon. Oh my God. The truth is that Charlie was under immense pressure and he was facing financial threats over his shifting stance on Israel, over who he was hosting, over on from his podcast to people that were on stage at America Fest, Dave Smith, Tucker Carlson. That is reality, my friends. Again, I want those people to know your money means nothing to me. I already said no to it. That's why I don't care to be in those circles. Make me persona non grata. I know what I did wrong. I looked you in your face and I said no to your money. Okay? Don't push me or I will name more names. What happens in the Hamptons is not going to stay in the Hamptons. Okay? Bring in our movie poster. I know what you did this summer. Okay? Got to add Josh Hammer's face to that poster as well because suddenly everybody's talking. So let's buckle up for some more indisputable facts, okay? People that were at this weekend soiree in which Aaron Wexler sent out some of the invitations to, they're confirming that Charlie was pressed. Now, this was a multi-day weekend, but they're all like, yeah, no, at every layer, Charlie was facing pressure, questions from Seth Dillon. There's no way around that truth that they were not happy with his position, his modified position. I have it on first person account that on the first day of the retreat, of which there were smaller meetings that took place, and then like, you know, the retreat itself, Charlie presented and he explained that he felt that it was wrong that he couldn't publicly criticize Israel. He apparently used an example that if he tweeted, and again, we're riffing here, but something along the lines of Charlie said, if I tweeted, I think that Bibi Netanyahu should resign, that he would then be unfairly attacked. And Seth Dillon then allegedly, pipes up and goes back and forth with him quite aggressively, saying like, yeah, because that would be anti-Semitic. I heard that after Charlie left, Josh Hammer was upset. Josh Hammer, I know for a fact, was a part of the beehive that was swarming him about people that he was having at his conferences. I know for a fact. So if you'd like to dispute that, Josh Hammer, and release your text messages and pretend that you were just, what, chill and supportive and thumbs up, cool. I welcome you on this platform, okay? You are allowed to literally sit next to me and say, that isn't reality, and here's how it all went down. When I was the greatest supporter, and I never cared about who he had, even though I got destroyed in debate by Dave Smith on his stage, I was cool with that. I love free speech. It's amazing. Okay? I am offering you my platform to do that. I'm not here. I'm not in the business of smearing, okay? I need answers, and I don't like the fact that people are telling small lies, and they're misrepresenting things, okay? Now, as I have said multiple times, what I am uncovering here is a response to what I feel was a severe misrepresentation by Bibi and his echo here in America, of which I would say Josh Hammer and Seth Dillon are part of that echo, okay? I am in no way attacking that narrative and associating it with the events that took place on Utah's campus, but I don't like little lies. So let's attack this lead up. Okay, let's attack this lead up because there's no reason for Bibi to have lied, as I've said many times. So we talked about Bill Ackman. lot yesterday. I talked about Bibi Netanyahu, the phone call, the do you want to come to Israel kind of trip kind of thing that to me, as I've experienced, has been a lace threat when I was going off the reservation of Israel by asking perfectly sensible questions. I kind of got these invites from people like, once you speak to this person, you'll see things. Anyways, Bill Ackman responds to yesterday's episode, okay? And I have it. Hold on. I printed this out. Let me find it. Okay. Here it is. It's actually right here in front of me. There are two ways to describe his response. I would describe it either as a CVS receipt. You buy one item. Next thing you know, you're holding 27 pages. And you don't know why. I don't understand. I bought one chapstick and here we are. You can also describe it as like an online recipe, you know, something looks good. You see an online recipe. Oh, I want to make that. You want to know how to make latkes. But first, homemade chef Ackman has to tell you about how this recipe reminds him of his bubby's house and that Hanukkah they spent in Israel and you know, all the kids love it. And you're like, bro, just how many cups of shredded potato? Please, please just give us the ingredients. This is his tweet. I printed his tweet out on two pages. Okay. I don't know. You got to bring back the word count. The Twitter was not meant for this, okay? And because I will not be teaching a seminar on or this semester on Ackman's 955 word response, I'll just provide you here with the highlights, okay? So he sets it up that he's a victim of something that never happened. Everybody watched my episode yesterday, okay? I never said the sentence, Bill Ackman blackmailed Charlie Kirk. That never happened. But of course, he's doing the typical, like, you know, the Israeli brand thing is I'm a victim. And let me tell you why I'm a victim. So he just sets it up. And I don't know why he's putting these things in parentheses of Charlie's supposed evolving stance. Okay, we can watch clips of that in a little bit. It's not supposed. And saying it's supposed doesn't make it so. But he then says, Candace also intimated that I, quote unquote, blackmailed Charlie. No full sentence there because I never said it. I never said Bill Ackman blackmailed Charlie. There was a file presented, do this or else. Okay. And I wouldn't have said that. Okay. The first five paragraphs of this never ending tweet are regarding how he met Charlie, which is not something that was ever in contention, okay? I followed Charlie Kirk on X. I admired him. I connected him. Our DMs, May of this year, expressed interest. We got on Zoom. We talked to this on Zoom. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, you just can just delete it. Nobody cares. Not a single person cares. He then takes us through how the weekend event came together, and he even provides us with a detailed itinerary of that event. I mean, I don't know if you needed to hear the itinerary. He gets so detailed that he even has this sentence here where he wants us to know that it was even, quote unquote, punctuated by meals. Oh, okay. That's good to know that the event, those who attended it, the sessions were punctuated by meals. I don't care, Bill. I literally don't care at all what you ate. I understand there was an itinerary. I just don't care. Conspicuously missing. Okay. Then the kind of wraps it up. And he's like, in short, this was not an intervention to blackmail Charlie into adopting certain views on Israel. It was nothing of the sort. Okay, buddy, I never said you blackmailed Charlie. I asked you if this moment happened. I asked you about Bibi Netanyahu. I asked you about whether or not there was pressure that was put on Charlie, which the attendees themselves are telling me that this happened. Okay. So what's going on here? Also, it's rather conspicuous given yesterday's episode. And of course, he had a big timing here. Like, I shouldn't even respond. He's so widdle. You know, widdle. I just love billionaires, right? They're just so full of themselves. They are so, their arrogance matches their bank accounts. Like, oh, we should all be like, oh, he's got billions. Let's just take it. Let's just, oh my, well, he couldn't do anything wrong. Yet you need to answer basic questions, and we gave you an opportunity to do that. Conspicuously missing is you not addressing whether or not Charlie was offered more money and funding from Bibi Netanyahu. Could you help us out? Whether or not Bibi Netanyahu invited him to Israel as a last-ditch effort to reaffirm his support for Israel, or if, as I asserted and as I maintain, Charlie was being pressured throughout this event about his viewpoints on Israel, and to him, he reflected that this felt like an intervention, okay? Can you answer those basic questions? That would be great. Like I said, it's interesting. You didn't even mention Bibi Netanyahu at all. You can stand up to him. Does anybody want to jump in and say, no, yeah, the letter Charlie wrote him in May was just like a glowing, he just was overcome with passion and said, I love Israel. You guys are amazing. You're beautiful. We're going to win this thing and you're perfect and doing nothing wrong. Love you, Bibi. I just find that weird that no one wants to address the substance of the claims here, whether or not maybe Bill himself has an opinion on whether Bibi lied by severe omission when he mentioned his last correspondences with Charlie. Because I feel like if Charlie said, I don't want to go to Israel, maybe don't bring up, I just invited him. I guess if it was friendly and everything was great and he was just going to come out, and sadly he won't be able to make it out here. And regarding, you know, just the public here, if you're trying to decide what's real and what's fake, whether or not what we're telling you is real or fake, you can take Charlie in his own words. I mean, shout out to Village Crazy Lady on X. She's a great follow. She just reads Bill Ackman's diatribe and says, okay, she goes through the itinerary. Bill Ackman just confirmed that he hosted his meeting with Charlie on August 4th and 5th. Here's Charlie talking to Megyn Kelly the very next day on August 6th. Now, how do you think that meeting went down? Oh, yeah, forgot to tell you that. That's the next day, okay? That is the next day that Charlie sits down and vents his frustration about how he is being treated. Take Charlie in his own words. And by the way, yesterday, we only showed one portion of what Charlie said to Megyn on that show. Go watch the full thing. Remember, he's with Bill. He's with Seth. He's in the Hamptons. Bill just confirmed that gratefully. And then suddenly he's overcome with a need to vent about the pressure that both he and Megyn are facing as people that have traditionally always supported Israel. Let's take Charlie in his own words. Take a listen.
My contention here is that some in the pro-Israel camp are so knee-jerk about calling you anti-Semitic or getting deeply offended if you say anything that doesn't align with their narrative, that it undermines their own cause. And I have to tell you, I find it very irritating because I do feel like some of us have earned the right to have some credibility on the subject of Israel and don't want to be called those names when we have some mild pushback on some of the overreaches, whether it's whether they're winning or losing the propaganda war right now. And my contention is they've begun to lose it. And I realize it's propaganda coming at us from Hamas, but their numbers have turned here in America. They've turned not so much with Republicans, a little bit with Republicans, but completely with the Democrat Party and with independents. They have shifted mightily from at least double digits highs to single digit lows now with when it comes to approval. And also, with respect to, you and I speculated about this at the Turning Point event, whether the possibility of Jeffrey Epstein possibly being a Mossad agent or asset or affiliated with, that's been turned around on me too, to you must be anti-Semitic. What the hell? That's such bullshit. The same people who say you can criticize Israel, that's fine. We won't call you anti-Semitic if you criticize Israel. Now, turn around immediately and say you're anti-Semitic for even raising that. I completely reject that. And I raise this as a pushback against my friends on that particular strain of the aisle to watch it, because you don't want to alienate people who are openly your friends by going nuts in your crackdowns on mild nuts pushback right on word. Anything related to Israel. Now you take
I'm
it.
I'm so glad you brought this up. And I would second that, Megyn. I think I have a bulletproof resume showing my defense of Israel, both on campus, on social media, to great, let's just say mockery and scorn at times, where because I believe it, right? I believe in the scriptural land rights given to Israel. I believe in fulfillment of prophecy. And again, I'm not a theologian, but I'm a Christian. My life was changed in Israel. The spiritual energy is so amazing there. I want them to win. I've said that repeatedly.
Same.
And however, Megyn, you're hitting on something very potent and important. Now, let me first say, I don't want to judge an entire group, because there's been many people in the pro-Israel world that have been very sweet, very kind, very nuanced, very Charlie, you're with us. You don't have to agree all the time. However, and I will say this, the behavior by a lot both privately and publicly, are pushing people like you and me away. Not like we're going to be pro-Hamas. But we're like, honestly, the way you are treating me is so repulsive. I have text messages, Megan, calling me an anti-Semite. I am learning biblical Hebrew and writing a book on the Shabbat. I honor the Shabbat, literally the Jewish Sabbath. I visit Israel and fight for it. And there's another article out in the Times of Israel today. I could read it on air. I was just reading before I got on. Charlie, what are you doing? Like, why are you? What am I doing? I'm sorry. Like, let's just take a step back here.
I can tell you right now, from the energy that is coming out of him, the energy that's coming out of Megan, is where I was 2 years ago. Okay? I've been there. You can't even lie to, you can't even attempt to lie to me about what is pouring off of both of them. I was someone who spent my life, my political life, defending Israel. Didn't really mean anything to me. It seemed like a good, you know, argument on its surface that we should support them. They're the only democracy in the Middle East. Okay, now I know that that's not even true. But like, who cares? I was just like pro-America and I wanted to focus on BLM and getting Black America better. And then that happened. I said one thing and suddenly like, whoa, it was like they just line up. Like you're just, it's like Agent Smith. Okay. It's like Agent Smith in the Matrix. How many can there be all saying the same thing? And then they gaslight you. They make you think you're crazy because they're like, why don't you understand why what you did is really wrong? I remember this. I remember the tweet. I said, no person, nobody, no nation anywhere in the world has a right to commit genocide. And I was suddenly being flooded with messages from people. Dave Rubin, I remember this. I was like, what did you mean by that? And then they're texting me. It's like, we can help you. You can help me what? I said something that made sense. Like, this should not offend anybody. Nobody has, genocide's not cool, right? Did something change? Where was I? It's when you tweeted it. And like, you could have been clearer. You should have added that Israel would never do that. I'm like, okay, you guys are being insane. This statement stands. I was referring to Brian Mast's remarks, but even if I wasn't, and I just tweeted genocide is always wrong, that tweet should always be right. I can feel that energy, okay? When you're not sure who your friends are, they're starting to gaslight you. They're making you think you're going crazy for having sensible positions. And there's no halfway house for this, okay? I can tell you that. You're either going to take being kicked in the chest, okay, and told get out, and then suddenly they're all communicating behind your back. And just where he talks about that article, something goes out and suddenly it's like, you know, what's going on? They're like trying to make you think you're going crazy because you're saying some sensible stuff. Charlie was at that moment. He says that he is receiving messages calling him an anti-Semite. So how can you lie right now and dispute it? And better question, why are you lying? I don't like little lies. I'm being contacted by a lot of people that are telling me that just within 48 hours before Charlie passed away, his top Jewish donors were pulling funding from him, demanding that Charlie take their name off of the building that they had donated to Turning Point. I guess I can figure out who that is, how many people could have donated a building. And then once Charlie was killed, they said, never mind, put it back on the building. Okay. Charlie himself had alluded to a tremendous loss of money coming in. And we'll speak about that more. More people are going to come out with information. This is all inevitable. Okay. And I'll also point you in this direction. You guys remember Bibi recently was on a PR blitz, despite the fact that he was, you know, fighting this 96,000 front war because Israel didn't do nothing, okay? He was doing a ton of podcasts in America. He went on to Patrick Bet-David's podcast. He went on to Brendan Tatum's podcast. He went on to the Nelk Boys podcast. Anybody find it weird he didn't do Charlie Kirk's show? Homie very quickly told us that Charlie was penning love letters to him in May. I just love you so much. It's amazing. They were so close. The boys just hits him up like, hey, I know we're fighting this 97,000 front war because we're always the victims, but do you want to just come and maybe stay at my place for the weekend here in Israel? Like, that's the vibe that Bibi was rushing to present to the media. So why didn't he do Charlie Kirk's show? I'll leave that as a question for you guys. Common sense. Common sense, okay? I don't like small lies. And remember, Bibi started this. I am responding to his shamelessness, shameless misrepresentation of what Charlie was going through and what Charlie was saying. Because, and I want to be clear to me right now, it feels, and I'm using a corporate term here, a bit like a hostile takeover, okay? Charlie builds the company organically on the basis of Charlie and Charlie's honest ideas. Suddenly, that company's got a lot of money, and Charlie's honest ideas are starting to change or maybe add more color. And now he's getting financial threats. He's being called names. He's being told who and what he's allowed to speak to. And he's taking a stance. He's taking a stand privately up to these people. And then it doesn't matter anymore because Charlie's dead. And those very same people who were pressing him are now doing, like, very quickly trying to set in stone that, oh, Charlie, essentially, the energy is Charlie died for Israel. He's just one of us. Nobody ask any more questions. That is literally untrue, and we're not going to allow it, okay? It's just not true. I'm getting even more interesting tips coming from Turning Point employees. Something, again, that I didn't even realize until they said it. Do you guys notice that, like, Bill Ackman says this thing and drops the itinerary? But I've worked for Turning Point for 2 years. You've seen Turning Point in the public. Have you ever heard of Turning Point doing a weekend summit and not publicizing it? In fact, none of those attendees, you'll remember they were taking pictures in the Hamptons and all dolled up. There was this whole ring debate happening about a girl who had gotten engaged. I think her name was Sarah Stockton. They said her ring was too small and they called her a broke B-I-T-C-H. There was this whole drama that was happening, which we'll unpack a different day. Maybe I'll leave today's on this tidbit. But those people never mentioned that they were in the Hamptons for a Turning Point event or for a Turning Point weekend, which Bill is saying. Why is that? Were they told not to say anything about being at that event? Because Bill Ackman's being very open about it, but they weren't open about it at that time. We'll leave there. We will leave it right there, okay? I will just add here that the response to me asking these questions, it is like, if you want to know why everyone hates, like, rabid supporters of Israel, it's because they never change their tune, right? They're like in the comments being like, Bill Ackman, sue her, take her money, take her money. That's it. That's how we win. This is what they always do. They threaten to sue you. They threaten to smear you, to libel you. How dare you even ask the questions? This is this chick. I don't even know what her name is, her real name is, but like the gay who's straight is how she goes. This is what, like, before Charlie died, I'm not kidding, a week before he died, this was her tweet to him. I'm going to show you how sick these people are, okay? Do you have that tweet, Skylar? Oh, okay. Well, she tweeted this whole thread about how Charlie Kirk had to distance himself from Tucker Carlson. She was one of the people creating online pressure. Charlie, you know, Tucker Carlson has gone a bridge too far, you know, blah, 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 blah. And Charlie's going to ruin his company. Again, there's always the threat, of money. And yes, she happens to be Jewish, okay? And then Charlie dies and she's like, oh my gosh, I can't, this person I was just saying, like, you know, kind of, you know, light little, oh, they do this or else to pray for Charlie Kirk. And now she's arrived at this Bill Ackman thing and she's sue her. Just sue. That's how we win. We crush them economically. We're sick of this. We are, all of us, collectively, the globe, we're tired of you guys, okay? It's always about money, threats, all of this stuff. It's ridiculous. Do what we say or we'll ruin your life. We're going to call up all our friends and we'll just start writing hit pieces about you and we'll destroy you. Do what we say or we'll have you canceled. We'll have your sponsorships dropped. Do what we say or we'll make sure that you're fired. We'll put pressure so that you can't earn an income. If you're still not going to listen to us and you survive that, we're going to sue you for everything you have. You guys suck, okay? We don't care about your money. We are tired of it. This reveals who you are, not who I am. The truth should be enough. I've offered him my platform. If there is more you'd like to say, Bill, things you'd like to clarify, again, my platform is yours, even though I know you're so highfalutin and above us. He even says in that tweet, by the way, he says, like, speaking about how much, you know, they just don't care about you billionaires. He's like, and the fact that she monetized her video, something along those lines, like talking about yesterday's episode, oh my God, how can she read ads? Oh, are you the same Bill Ackman that made an absurd amount of money while we were in COVID lockdowns and we couldn't work? Are you the same Bill Ackman who, like, turned that into, like, billions? I'm pretty sure you are. So maybe check yourself, okay? I'm so sick of this. Nobody can make money but us. By the way, the person that was in the Hamptons, other people that were at the Hamptons that are all talking about this, said Bill Ackman got up and gave a presentation and told them that they shouldn't own property. and they should give money to, like, you know, stocks. That's how they can be successful. They just want to rule over us all, don't they? Allegedly, that's what he said. Bill Ackman, you can reply. Did you tell people that they shouldn't own property when you gave your presentation on this now infamous meeting in the Hamptons, which wasn't publicized until I publicized it? I don't know. I'm just asking questions. Are we allowed to do that? Or are you going to sue me? You're going to crush me. You're going to impoverish us all. Why are you guys like this is my question. Laura Loomer in too. This is like how Bill, I guess, wins the argument. They're like, Bill gave money. It's all about money all the time. Bill Ackman says he's offering $1 million to whoever any information he has regarding the person who assassinated Charlie Kirk. And then she attacks me yesterday and she's like, Bill Ackman gave $1 million, Candace. What did you give? What did you give? I don't know. 2 years of my effing life to Charlie, helping him build things. Why is everything about money to you? Why do you think having money makes you a decent human being? Why are you so soulless? What is wrong with you? Do you understand that spiritually something is wrong with you? If your instinct, just so you guys know, regular people don't behave like that. I want you to know, because you made me, I don't think you recognize your own flaws. When regular people have like a little tiff, they just have a conversation, okay? So like if I have a disagreement and I say it's not what I did, I don't say I'm going to destroy your life, okay? I'm going to make you lose your job and I'm going to sue you, okay? That's a demonic force that lives in you. That's what you have to know. Your money instinct is not right. It's crazy. And everyone's paying attention to it. Answer the questions and I will publish the truth. The end. Read a couple of ads. I said I wasn't going to freak out today. I did. Freaked out a little bit right there at the end. I'm trying to calm down. First, I'm going to remind you guys about Tax Network USA. I know because I know I shouldn't read these ads because Bill Ackman is like, how could you put ads in here? I can hedge against COVID and make billions, but you, little girl, don't read an ad. Okay, I'm freaking out again. Back to Tax Network USA. If you're stressed about back taxes, maybe you missed the April deadline or your books are a mess, do not wait. The IRS is cracking down. Penalties are adding up fast. 5% per month, up to 25% just for not filing. But there is help. Tax Network USA can take the burden off your shoulders and stop the spiral before it gets worse. They've helped thousands of Americans, whether you're an employee, a small business owner, or you haven't filed in years. They have seen it all, and they know exactly how to clean it up with direct access to powerful IRS programs and expert negotiators on your side. Tax Network USA knows how to help you win. You'll get a free consultation, and if you qualify, they may even be able to reduce or eliminate what you owe. More importantly, they'll help protect you from wage garnishments or bank levies. So do not wait. Call. Don't wait for the next IRS letter. You should call 1-800-958-1000 or visit tnusa.com/Candace. You may have missed the tax deadline, but you haven't run out of options. So let Tax Network USA help you by calling 1-800-958-1000 or visit tnusa.com/Candace. Also telling you guys about Nimi Skincare. You know I love them. Look around. You will take a note of who is standing by Charlie in this terrible moment, and you will also notice who is silent or who is cheering it. There are many businesses who refuse to say a word about this cruel act. It's not left or right. Again, this is about humanity. The silence speaks volumes. Now is the time to really step up and support the companies that are willing to be bold, because when they stand with us, they give us the courage to be fearless, and Nimi Skincare is one such company. They have always been unapologetic about their values. They love God, they love family, and they love country. Their products are made here in the USA, and they are committed to supporting the values of our movement. So right now, Nimi is matching every donation that is made to Turning Point USA. You can visit tpusa.com, make your donation, and forward the receipt to faith@nimiskincare.com. Again, that's faith@nimiskincare.com, and Nimi will match it dollar for dollar. Stop waiting to support those businesses. You can go ahead and head to nimiskincare.com today and start your routine. Don't put it off. Just do it. You'll thank me later. They have dozens of incredible products, plus a quick skincare quiz that gives you personalized recommendations for your exact skin type. Remember this, we have to support businesses that support us, and Nimi Skincare is one such business. It's clean, effective products made here in the USA, and they have never wavered in standing for faith, family, and freedom. Go to NimiSkincare.com and use code Candace10, and you'll get 10% off your first order. In moments like these, we need to be crystal clear about who has our back. This is not left or right, it's good versus evil. And Nimi Skincare is standing boldly with us. Before we get to comments, I'm also going to tell you guys about American Financing, because the cost of everything is still out of control. Many of us are relying on credit cards to cover essentials. If that debt is piling up, you are not alone. Americans collectively owe $1 trillion in credit card debt. You might have considered reaching out to my friends in American Financing, but hesitated because you don't want to give up your low mortgage rate. Well, there's good news. They've created the Smart Equity Loan, which is a solution that is designed to help you take control of your finances without touching your current mortgage. Unlike an HELOC, which can have varied interest rates, the Smart Equity Loan offers a fixed rate. That means one predictable monthly payment, giving you peace of mind. This loan allows you to leverage the equity in your home to pay off high interest debt, free up your cash flow, and keep your existing low mortgage rate intact. It only takes 10 minutes to get started. There's no upfront or hidden fees. So call American Financing and start saving now. The number is 800-795-1210. Again, that's 800-795-1210 or visit AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. Wow, 260,000 people watching live. You guys, that is amazing. That makes me feel so good because I know that that number represents the people who are waking up. This is not left or right. I don't care. Do stop trying to make this a trans issue or right. That whole debate, it's low, guys. I'm telling you, that is not where we need to be right now as a society. We are fighting evil people who rule over us and impact both sides. Okay, that's the wake-up call. That's the wake-up call we all need right now. And I hope that people are waking up to that fact as we look into what happened here. I'm going to get into some of your comments here. I am totally in the wrong document. Okay. First up, we have Anna P. I think this is the first one, right? Am I right, Anna P? Okay, I am in totally the wrong document. I don't even have the right document up. Give me just a second. No, you're good. It's cool. I can just go backwards. I just, for whatever reason, was looking at the timeline because I've been reading from these notes. Okay. First up in the comments, we have Jenna V, who writes, thank you for speaking truth. Rest in peace, Charlie. Thank you so much for your support. Larissa writes, I pray that you are protected throughout this investigation. At any time the enemy tries to lift their hand against you, they are redirected in Jesus' name. Let's get to the bottom of the corruption. We do. This is the case. This is the case. We're not letting this one go. Alma Coronado writes, sending you love from Douglas, Arizona. I'm sending you guys love back. And thank you for that donation. Thank you to everyone who went onto my website and bought a hat, one of our CIA hats, bought a t-shirt, and supported us because they're going to sue us all. We're going to sue you until you agree. Okay. And threaten to sue you and have lawyers involved, and we will crush you because we're really good people, is what they say. And the rumors aren't true. Okay. Now that we all got it out of our system, sue, 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 sue. Read some more comments. S61 writes, may the Lord continue to keep you strong and protected as you continue to reveal the truth. Thank you, guys. Keep the prayers up. I am telling you, they help. Pray. Pray every day. Go to church. I love seeing people who are like, something about that moment is when you woke up and realized we are fighting real spiritual evil and you felt inclined to go to church. Maple Leaf Girl writes, please look into Governor Cox. He's a corrupt rhino. He stole the election. I've gotten a lot of emails that are saying that. I obviously know nothing about that election. He stole the election to reinsert himself as the governor. Reach out to Phil Lyman, who ran against Cox and was chosen as a Republican candidate by the delegates, and Eric Moutsos was the LEO and has dealt with Zinn in the past. That's an interesting tidbit, and I will look into all of those things. Mia writes, praying for your safety. We need truth, and I trust only you right now. Thank you, and especially I want to say thank you to Lance's family, because I know this is not an easy time for you, and she was telling me, and he was telling me, most people that I spoke to in that family were saying that they were receiving all sorts of phone calls from people that are just looking up their last name and thinking like, oh, you must support this or whatever. They're like, no, like our values, irrespective of politics, these are not our values. We are horrified by this. And remember that. Just remember that. Don't harass people unless you're certain that they would possibly agree with this. And they do not agree with this. And they want answers just as much as we do. Chips writes, the text chain from Tyler to his boyfriend, no 22-year-old uses perfect grammar in a text chain, commas and periods. Something about that text chain is telling me we need a little bit more about that text chain. Stephen Carrington writes, may God and Jesus forever have your back. Thank you so much, Stephen. Bible with Bell writes, don't believe these texts for a second. He was worried about leaving evidence, but then conveniently texts every detail. Thank you. Thank you. I do not want to leave any evidence other than this very elaborate text chain that tells you my exact open and close motive. and why I did this and that I acted alone and that it was you are totally surprised by it. It feels a little fake and gay. Gotta tell you guys, it feels a little fake and gay, and there will be no fakeness and no gayness in this investigation. Nothing but truth. It's all I require from everybody. Mind Tricks writes, casings BS. Casings are BS. Okay. You guys got to just write the full word. Okay. I'm not good at slang. He was intending to retrieve the gun. Why would he write the messages? Text messages also looked fake. This whole thing is fishy. Nobody talks like that, especially after he murders someone. No way. Yeah. Like even talking about, and this is why I inscribed this on the casings. Like, are you trying to get away with it or are you not trying to get away with it? Because this is a conflict for me and we're going to need a timeline. I need evidence of these text messages. Grooving with Christ writes, I believe the Catholic Church should honor Charlie Kirk's legacy of courage and unwavering truth by making him a saint. His sacrifice deserves eternal recognition. God bless you always, Candace. Well, the decision is not up to me, obviously. And what I do know is that irrespective, the response to this globally has been amazing. All of you guys, the tags that I'm seeing all over the world, the football players, the singers. I'm going to show you guys tomorrow, like Jamie Lee Curtis. She's on the left, right? And she was crying over this. Totally different politics. It's important to realize that this impacted people who have a soul. And they have removed us from our soul and have us warring with each other. Like we are so in our minds warring about these ideas, not realizing they are poisoning us. And I mean that physically, but more importantly, spiritually. We are fighting real demons. And if you were on the left, you are not my enemy. If you fall in for ideologies, I did too, okay? I've come out on the other side. We have to now meet in the middle, and we need to look at the true evil that rules over us, okay? And I think that is a great place to stop. Oh, we've got two more comments here. Lucy writes, we love you, Candace. We have your back yesterday, today, tomorrow, and forever. Thank you so much, Lucy Marion. And Bayan writes, love you, Candace, from Saudi Arabia. Thank you. You are my spirit animal. God bless you and keep you safe and your family. Thank you for being the source of sanity. You are absolutely right. It is good versus evil. And I also want to say there are more of us than them. That was a Charlie Kirk thing. He said to me, what is the one thing that every slave civilization has had since the beginning of mankind and what they have in common, pardon. And the answer is that there was always more slaves than masters, which is something to consider. There is more of us than there are of them. And I think that's why they're in a panic, because we're waking up. We'll see you guys tomorrow.